Hey, White Sox fans, it's Brett Ballantini here, hosting Southside Sox podcast number 39. And we have a special, special sort of different treat here on this podcast after, I want to say years, if not certainly months of trying to chase this guy down to participate even more than he already does in Southside Sox. We have Anohito, commenter extraordinaire from Southside Sox, joining me on this podcast. And the reason isn't just because he's such an energetic member of our community, but specifically because Carlos Rodon is, if not a favorite player — we're going to get the rankings here in the podcast, I think — but certainly close to the top, if not at the top, of his favorite White Sox players. And obviously yesterday's no-hitter, or I guess I should say Thursday's no-hitter, was certainly some peak excitement for Ano. So welcome, Anohito, and thank you for joining me on this.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you, Brett. It's great to be here. I, like you said, it has been a long time coming, I guess, but it is my first time doing something like this. And after an event like this, you know, once in a lifetime, I decided, yes, I have to grasp the opportunity and just do so, because I really want to just tell the stories and all that stuff that I want people to hear. And as I'm sure people have already known, well, with me being so energetic and passionate, sometimes the things I say are like just so too crazy. I'm like really low when they're low, but I can also be really high when they're high. And that's where we're going to go today, really high. So
what you're telling me, Ano, is it's going to take a near perfect game and a no hitter to get you on a podcast.
Well, I don't know if anything else could have done it. I was like, last year when they got to the playoffs, finally, I was so overcome with emotion that I wrote this long post for it. And I thought I would be doing something for that too. I didn't know how that would actually carry out though, but I was pretty enthused for that. Yeah. So I guess just, well, you know, I have been a longtime fan, not as long as some other people, certainly. And I'm going to plug my own post again that I'm sure you remember, but the one that I made along some years back about how I got into baseball. Mm-hmm. When I'm just like a complete, I guess, a nerd geek and all that, but it just happened and I loved it. So that all started back in 2008. So certainly, definitely not as long as some other people, but I will have to say I've already endured over a decade of this team. And I mean, you know how the last decade has gone.
Yeah, I was
gonna say, I've stuck by it every time. So
yeah, you chose a rough, you know, this sort of rough decade. You chose a rough decade to sort of dive in. I have to say, you've earned your stripes, that's for sure.
And there's still some really good stuff that happened during that too, like Burley's perfect game, obviously, mm-hmm. and a lot of other stuff that happened, interesting, cool games that I've been to, and one that I'm certainly going to talk about very soon.
Yeah, let's talk about, before we get into maybe sort of the story of your connection with Carlos as a fan of his, just take me through how you're feeling during the game. At what point are you sensing maybe that it's something special, the no-hitter?
Well, here's where the really funny part of it is. Generally, and you might not even know this, and I'm sure many other people wouldn't notice either, although I have hinted towards it, but when I'm watching, or rather listening to the games, mostly on the radio, I'm actually multitasking. I have a whole host of other interests, especially video games. So baseball, I usually have on while I'm playing video games, and yesterday was no different. However, it was because I was late. I was dealing with some stuff, and when I came in to pretty much, I guess, see right. The Sox already up 6-0, I was like, I made a joke. I was like, maybe I shouldn't even turn on the radio.
That's
then. Imagine me turning it on, just hearing like it just ruins the whole thing. And I was like, oh, well, I'll just leave it that way and hope Rodon can get the W. So I generally have two screens. That's how I operate. So one screen was Southside Sox and game day, and the other screen was my video game. And I was just playing it while just following along on game day. And something happens on game day, I comment in the thread. It's just how I naturally do it. It's I actually, I guess that can segue into the other thing that I'm sure we'll touch on, how much I comment. But for me, it's just so natural to just like type a thought out. I guess that's just how I treat the internet in general, not just SSS, but like any other forum or chat or anything. I'll just type it out. And that's why you sometimes get those really crazy swear filled rants from me. And then other times it's just really quick thoughts like, oh,
right,
because that's just how I do it. So but yeah, so I did not have the radio on. I only had game day. I only had my game still. And then like people started just mentioning like wow, Radon's gonna blow out his arm on this game alone unless he are they gonna take him out or something unless he has a perfect game going. And it was like the fifth inning done already. I was like, wait, hold on. Holy crap. He actually does. I was like, wow. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, I am kind of worried now because, you know, what with his history and all that, can he actually get through this many pitches so suddenly, so soon in the season? And, well, it just kept coming. And one of the funny comments that I found elsewhere, because I'm like all over other social medias as well. I've got like Twitter tabs open as well as other things. And one of the funny comments I found was that Rodon's shoulder is screaming at him to give up a hit. And it, like I said, at that point, I'm just really conflicted whether it was going to happen or not. And I honestly, given how this season has started, this isn't in a bad way to say that I'm losing hope, but I guess I'm losing hype is how I'm going to put it. Where they're like World Series contender. Yeah. Right. And then they put out all these like pregame stuff and like, we're back, change the game. We're going to go all the way. And then they come stumbling out of the gate like that. It takes a lot of wind out of sail. I mean, obviously I'm still going to be with them all the way and stuff, but like the more excited you get for them and the more they fail, the more it like hurts at the end and the game feels more painful. So I'm just like, going to try to not be as hyped for it. So that part of that was why I was like, well, I don't know if he's going to do it then, but I'll just, I don't know, maybe. I mean, you know.
So at any point, Anno, are you actually switching over and focusing primary or full attention? At what point, if you do start focusing full attention on Carlos pursuing, obviously the perfect game, pretty much the entire game, or I guess in the ninth, are you switching over just to hope the holds the no-hitter?
See, that's another thing that was also kind of, I guess, I don't know if I'm superstitious on it, but I'm just like, well, I've been shooting things the whole time with game day on the side monitor, and I just glance over every now and then. But, you know, it's getting closer and closer, and I feel like if I just keep watching it, like watching the pot, like the kettle boil, you know, then the thing's just going to pop out and say in play runs rather than if I just kept playing my game and then glanced over and saw, hey, you got another two outs. Yeah. It sort of eased my mind more that way. And
You don't want to let game day know that you care that much. So it's sort of like, you know, peripheral vision. That,
exactly. You know, it sounds so silly and superstitious when it's like that. But I think everyone also feels that way when they're like looking at something like this.
Oh, certainly.
Unless they're live at the game, in which case you have no control over it.
Certainly. I was over in the SB Nation the Slack channel.
Oh,
and no one had mentioned anything at all. And of course I had to do my, because I don't really go in for that. And even going back to covering hockey, you'd catch the stuff where if you tweeted something out about it, like a shutout for a goalie, you know, that's like verboten, and you get scolded. And I think, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. But, you know, even then I tried to vary because nobody had made any mention of it. And usually you see that sort of thing. It's a little bit of a way to get a little bit of news ticker for me to see what's going around. Going on around in the league. And so, you know, I did just sort of throw something down there like, hey, you know, here's the score, here's the pitch count, you know, it might be something to pay attention to, you know. So I still did actually adhere somewhat to the superstition, even though technically I don't really go in for all of that. But I figured, you know, let's honor it, because of course I don't want to end up somehow feeling, you know, guilty. So I certainly can empathize with where you're at, where it's like, all right, just keep half of an eye on the game. Keep doing what you're doing.
Right, right.
Now, at what point or at any point do you actually
certainly the ninth inning when people were just saying, wow, what a play, Jose. And I was like, wait, what? Game day doesn't tell me that. And at that point, I just had to just look it up. And I was like, whoa, are you kidding me? That is, I mean, some, you know, people were already comparing it to the catch from Wise if this was going to be perfect. And you know, interestingly enough, at that point, I still didn't want to turn on my radio because I still had that superstition and it wasn't perfect yet. He still had two outs to go. Mm-hmm. But I was still like, you know, starting to pay attention to it. People already highlighted it on Twitter. So I saw the video and stuff. And okay. And then just as quick as that, the next pitch, really not the next pitch, but it felt like it. The next, he hits Perez.
So tell me then, having, you know, now obviously he's got a no-hitter. I mean,
right.
No argument that this is an incredible story for Carlos. Couldn't
absolutely
have to be a better guy.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you saw it immediately with his post-game comments, you know, somewhat self-deprecating, somewhat very sort of just mm-hmm. simple and almost mm-hmm. even innocent in a way, like, hey, am I supposed to actually give the ball to the Hall of Fame or whatever? I mean, that's very
those were great. And, I was watching those all morning.
You know, so sort of being able now to have it sink in that, you know, one of your favorite players, you know, has accomplished this. You know, how does it sort of, you know, encapsulate what has now been a pretty long fandom and, you know, at times a pretty difficult one?
It is truly amazing to see that he can actually do something like this after all what has happened, all those failures, all those injuries. And then I think especially the lowest point was definitely last year when he came back and couldn't even get an out. Like I couldn't even be angry at I may have to go back to my post to see if I did say something angry in the moment, but I'm pretty sure that I didn't take out any anger on for Carlos there for coming back for injury and then doing that poorly. But I definitely saw the vitriol from all those other people. And it just made me sad that I like Rodon so much and I still believed in him, and to see that happen and all that. And then they let him go. And that was just very sad after, I mean, obviously you can't really connect with players on a personal level or anything like that, but I felt I got a bit closer than other people did when he was doing all the streaming stuff at least. And it was good to chat with him, and he was very open on Q&A, so it was really, really fun.
Had you held out much hope? What percentage of hope did you have, like for example on the SB Nation GM simulation offseason? We refused Rodon arbitration, but he agreed to come back, which is exactly, you know, how it played out. I think maybe we even lowballed him worse than the White Sox did. But when you heard, and you know, I'm sure it wasn't a shock, wasn't too big a surprise. When you heard that, what percentage would you have placed the likelihood of him coming back, or did you really think it was?
I don't know if I placed a likelihood, but I felt that it wouldn't be a surprise if he did come back, and I really hoped he would. I think I really did hope he would, especially given how much he's been here and all that. And when they did announce him coming back, I welcomed him back, and I said I still believed in him. In you know, surrounded by the sea of other people who are cursing out Jerry and Han, asking what the hell were they doing. And all that.
Yeah, you know, definitely frustration, I think, less about Carlos.
Right, right.
The fact that it was only Carlos, you know, because when it's only Carlos, that's not a good offseason.
Totally,
you know.
Totally understandable there, yes.
So at what point, Ano, did the fandom begin? Was it when he was drafted? Was it when you first saw him start with the Sox? At what point did you sort of pick it up in terms of the fandom?
I think it was most certainly when I first saw him start. But even when he was drafted, I was already intrigued. Mm-hmm. It was a third round pick, and I even pulled up from the old White Sox archives my comment back then where I mentioned it took 99 losses and a sweep of the Cubs, or the Cubs sweeping us, to get this guy. So I hope he's not disappointing. And I hope we see a lot of that slider because that was what they were talking about, his 70 grade, although some rated it 80, so I always rated it 80 myself, that 70 grade's officially slider, how good it was, how he changes speeds on it to get people, like, it is just a really, really awesome thing to see, especially if, and going back to someone even before Carlos, that some people should and may remember, but Sergio Santos, when he had that slider going and just shutting everyone down as our closer, the surge protector, really enjoyed watching those. You just watch the other hitters get completely tied up with it, spinning in circles, swinging while their legs are getting slammed by the pitch. It's beautiful to watch. And
talk about another sweet guy. I mean, that's a guy I was lucky enough to cover really during, you know, you could say the peak of his career. It was brief, but I mean, you know, he ascended into the closer role and into some stardom and earned himself a pretty nice contract that he then took to Toronto. But yeah, another really sweet guy you liked to see success.
Yes, and it is a shame what happened to him at the end there, but while he was on, everyone loved it.
Yeah. And what a great story. You know, I mean, gosh, a guy who was a position player who then, you know, I mean,
there's not many
success stories at the professional level when you make that kind of switch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was really one of the first, at least in sort of, you know, this era, certainly this century. So it really started to take off that first start that you saw him with the White Sox. And from there,
the first appearance he had was a real interesting one. I remembered it as bases loaded, but as it turns out, when I did my research just earlier, it was actually two on for the inning, and he walked the first guy he faced, which I guess is, you know, just nerves. Can't fault him for that. And then he has to face, of all people, with the bases loaded, Ryan Rayburn, notorious Sox killer, which I'm sure everyone remembers as well. And sure enough, he gave up a hit and two RBI single to Rayburn. And I guess that's his christening by fire.
Yeah.
Trial by fire, as if there's any other way to get into being a Sox pitcher facing Ryan Rayburn and giving up a hit.
Yeah.
And then I pretty much forgot what happened after that, if he still got some more appearances and how he looked. He probably did, but I'm not recalling it as well, until he finally was going to get his first start. And that just happened to land on the day that SSS was having its meth up. And I think it was my second or third year attending one. So I was really excited for that too. And also, just by happenstance, the night before, there was rain. Mm-hmm. So it was a rained out game, and then our MEF up became a doubleheader, two baseball games for the price of one. We just completely lucked out there. Although the first game was Johnny Cueto almost throwing a CG. It wasn't a shutout because Alexei had a homer, which was, I still remember it too. I think he hit it towards the bullpen. That was cool to see. We were over in the first baseline side. So the ball just rockets away from us. Oh, man, the perspectives of the ballpark. It's been so long since I've been, so I missed that too. But, yeah, so Cueto almost threw a CG, but then Jose busted it at the end with a home run. And then I think they hit him some more to the point that they had to take him out, so he wasn't even able to finish the game. So that was at least fun to watch, the spoiling there. And then after a break was the second game when Rodon came out for the start. And I was so excited to see his first start. I was hoping to watch those strikeouts. And sure enough, 8 strikeouts over 6 innings, only gave up 2 runs. I don't even remember how he gave up those 2 runs. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't home runs. Mm-hmm. But he did rack up the strikeouts and got a quality start there. And then the offense also came alive. And it made for a very good day of baseball, even if the first game was a loss. But still, you remember the second game more because of recency bias and, of course, because it's a win. So I walked out of there that night really happy. And one of the images that I can show you was how, because I think the wind or something was being weird that night. Mm-hmm. So every time someone hit a home run, the fireworks were going off and the fog or the smoke from the fireworks lingered. And it even blew back onto the field, and it just created a weird eerie sort of misty thing there. And one of the jokes was like, towards the end, I think someone got a hit. I want to say it was Beckham, but maybe not. But anyway, someone got a hit. And it was most likely because the fielder out there lost it in the smoke. it was very significant how much smoke there was. So the image that I could I'll show you is that after the game, after we left, walked away from the park, you could still see the winning, because, after the after win fireworks smoke was just hovering over the field, and it created a very eerie look for the cell after leaving it like that. And it was a night to remember. It really was a night
in London or something. Yeah. All right, I got some important questions for Anohito, but we're going to take a quick break and be right back with Southside Sox podcast number 39. Hey, White Sox fans, we are back with Southside Sox podcast number 39. It's a special one because it's with commenting champ on Southside Sox. It's Anohito. We're talking on the occasion of one of his favorite guys, Carlos Rodon, no-hitter, which happened just this past Wednesday. And we've been talking a little bit about that and Ano's fandom of Carlos. So when... Ethan Katz was hired and when Carlos came back and we were getting sort of news that Ethan was really reaching out to everybody on the staff and working with them.
Oh my God, so much we heard about.
And Lopez, and I'm sure to some degree, Rodon. Did that pique your interest and hopes for Carlos to be able to come back strong given everything he's been really fighting his whole career and certainly the last couple of years?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, I'm no like Pitch FX or Pitching Ninja guy knowing exactly what mechanics are what or how things can get fixed or whatever. But I was basically going off the whole, not assumption because it actually happened, but how Cats fixed Giolito. I mean, you saw how everyone knows the story of how bad Giolito was and then what he became now. And a lot of it was thanks to him reaching out to Katz and going for him. And then when the Sox hired Katz, I could only just think like he's going to make the whole staff better. And when Rodon came back as part of that, I was really excited to think what he could do with Rodon as well. Although a lot of other people have pointed out that Rodon was still pretty good. It's just that the injuries are what always plagued him. And they didn't know how much Katz could help with that. And I mean, I guess that is true, yes, but at the same time, I don't know. I ignored reality for a second there and just was excited.
I'm not a pitching ninja guy either, but you know, I was skeptical because it seemed like what Katz was coming in and trying to do in a relatively short window of time. Let's face it, a year, a whole offseason could be a short window of time.
Oh yeah,
but it was adjusting the Carlos's lower body. And again, I don't recall the details enough, but it seems significant enough to me to be skeptical because it's like, geez, this is a guy who's pitched for you know whatever 15 years, certainly you know a decade very competitively, 5 years professionally. And sort of on the fly, he's going to be able to make these adjustments. But you see that apparently it really has taken with Carlos, a guy who must have really dug down and disciplined himself to really try to work on this. Whereas perhaps with other guys, maybe Ronaldo would be an example. Whatever those lessons and insights Ethan was trying to bring in spring training or even in the off season entering spring training, maybe weren't taken as easily. So it is a real tribute to Carlos, depending on how much, whether this is just 100% what Ethan suggested, or even if he's still working on that lower body adjustment, it's quite a tribute that he's been lights out. Cause this isn't just a no hitter he's thrown. He basically has been untouchable since his first spring training appearance.
Yes, definitely. And wow. I mean, it is just spring training and I'm sure a lot of people just like, dismiss it, but I hang on to almost every pitch even if it doesn't mean anything because I just love baseball and all that, so I'm watching all these spring training games and the ones that Los were in were holy cow, wow.
Yeah,
that was good to see, and I really hope that it would translate to the regular season. And then sure enough, when the Mariners start came, his start came, and the Sox were ailing for some good starting pitching, he delivered.
Yeah, he sure did. I mean, he's a guy who barely sort of hung on for that number five spot, and right now he's looking like a number two in this rotation, and that's a pretty impressive turnaround given we're just a couple turns into the rotation. Now,
right.
I know the all time ranking. I mean, where does Carlos sort of rank for you in terms of your all time Sox favorites? I assume he at least makes the starting lineup, but
I would actually put him pretty high up there now, because not just because of no hitter, but like all the other stuff he's done. And people wouldn't take that as like a lot that he's done, mm-hmm. but what he has done so far, I guess it would be let's see, how do I put it? The way he throws and the way he gets all these strikeouts and the way he's racking them up with the slider is just so great to see, and I really enjoy that. And he's also just such a great guy, and I got to know that by his Twitch stream. So I guess a little biased here and probably just say that that's probably one of the really big factors, mm-hmm. along with Giolito, is that they were both connecting with their fans outside mm-hmm. of the game, especially during that pandemic era, mm-hmm. when we just didn't have any baseball at all and people were hankering for anything that NBC Sports, they were putting out their virtual Sox games via MLB The Show. And I was watching those too. And, Jason Benetti was actually commenting on it with Chuck Garfine. And it was a really enjoyable watch, even if it was just virtual baseball, because it was at least something related to baseball.
Now, we got a lot of hype about Lucas and his gameplay, especially because he participated in the MLB tournament. Tournament that I think he made the actual
to the
World
finals.
Series. Right. And, you know, even to the point where Ashley Sanders even did write-ups, you know, for us on those games. Now, we know Carlos and his sort of persona there, the hard Carl, but we don't he's got much less publicity, I suppose, for his gaming. So I guess tell us a little bit about what it is he does and how he does interact with the people who follow him.
I guess what he does is, a lot of times he's playing Call of Duty Warzone, okay. and he's playing it with other White Sox players too. Giolito for one, Dallas Keuchel as well. He was also playing with Dylan Cease, and he was also, and the other thing he was playing was MLB The Show as well, which was really, really fun to watch an actual MLB player play MLB The Show and then sort of use himself. Like, I think, whether people remember or not, but when Giolito threw the no-hitter, one of the things that was mentioned was that he actually threw a no-hitter with himself in MLB The Show. And now he did it in real life, too, which is wild.
Funny. Yeah, same year, right.
And I think Rodon did the same. I forgot if it was a no-hitter, but it definitely was a very, very impressive game that he pitched with himself. And I think it was even more impressive than Giolito because the show didn't rate him high at all. So he had like really bad stats and he was a bronze or something. And one of his like either friends or I guess whatever recording buddies who had mentioned like this guy just threw a no hitter with himself and you're going to keep him on the bronze level.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
It was so funny to see. And watching those was just really great. There's one awesome clip, which if you do run it, I'll share it with you, mm-hmm. where basically he was playing the show there against, I guess, one of his buddies. And it was an at-bat where, I don't know, do you know how the show works? Where you get you basically move a cursor to where you think the ball is going to go.
Okay.
So basically he moved the cursor to exactly where that guy was going to throw it every time. Mm-hmm. And it's just watching an MLB player play the show and just know exactly what to do. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Really fun to watch. Yeah. And again, like I said, it was a time when there was no baseball and this was the closest thing to baseball. But at the same time, he was also like just interacting with the chat, with people asking him questions, all these people watching him, interacting with him, talking with him. Same with Gio. And both of these guys were just such a joy to watch and follow. And if you subscribe or donate to them, the money all goes to like charity. Mm-hmm. So it was also for a very good cause, and it was a really, really good time watching that. And doing that. So
Carlos is pretty open and pretty entertaining and engaging with the fans as he's playing or whatever he's doing.
He's
pretty frank. Like you sort of see when we see him maybe in his, even in his press conferences or post games where he's, you know, maybe a little self-effacing, you know, also confident, fun. That's coming across to the fans watching him while he's doing his Twitch stuff.
Because I could definitely see that personality from like his interview and stuff, and it just pulled me back to when he was streaming almost nightly, and it just reminded me of that, and it was really fun to see.
Well, let's pull it back now on Carlos's start, which obviously has been dynamite. Probably a guy, you know, destined to be player of the week for the no hitter coming up. But obviously two great starts, a guy who looks like he is obviously solidified his spot in the rotation, which was tenuous to begin the season. He was sort of five with an asterisk, even though you're very pleased with what he did in spring. It seemed very promising. And of course, you know, with the injury, as you even noted, as you were watching through half of one eye, as a perfect game was going on, you have this concern of, hey, he's racking up the pitches. And this is a guy who hasn't shown necessarily the best luck, if not the best durability. How do you see Carlos's season tracking? Is he a guy that could ascend to the point where in a playoff series, he's a guy who's going to get starts because he's made a role for himself among the top three starters on the Sox?
I guess we'll continue seeing, but so far what he's shown, how his fastball has a lot more life to it, how the slider can still wipe people out, it gives me a lot of confidence that he can actually keep going out and doing this.
Yeah, how impressive is it? I know it's been pointed out that it's absolutely not an anomaly for a pitcher when he's going after a milestone like a no-hitter or a perfect game to be cranking up the intensity, staying sharp, and even increasing velocity. But the fact that he's throwing his hardest pitch to the last batter of the game had to be pretty impressive to you.
Yes, that definitely letting it all out there. And I think as he said in his interview, he finally took a look at the pitch count and the ninth inning after the, what is it, first or second out, and he saw it was like 107 or something. He's like, oof, I better get this done now. And I think it's that mentality that just makes him throw even harder to just try to get it done, and get it done he did. It's almost, you know, I'm gonna use a I guess everyone knows it by now, but clutch at the end, which is pretty much what he's done also when he was streaming, where because Warzone is a game about being the last one standing.
Okay.
So when it just comes down to him and his crew against another crew, and they're just going to be fighting down to the last man standing, he pulls off just this magic sometimes where he just suddenly wipes out the whole other team for the win. And that is that finishing clutch closer mentality, that killer mentality, that hard Carl mentality that is probably what also shown through. And you know what, the same thing was said about Gio when he got his no hitter, because Gio also does that same thing. You can see that laser focus he had, and when because Gio's also playing Warzone, so when it does come down to that last man standing, he is just on the point. So I love seeing that focus from these athletes / gamers, what with me being one myself. I'm old now, so I'm not as competitive as them, but their skills are awesome to watch.
Did you ever imagine when you first started creeping into baseball and White Sox fandom in 08 or so, that this would be a way that you would be sort of engaging and interacting with players?
I actually never thought about it. I've been watching streams for a long time whenever I'm not playing games, or I have, like I said, I have two screens, so sometimes I'm watching a stream while I'm playing games. And I just like seeing other people either tackle the same things I did in a different way, or just watching their skill in something that I can never do. It's just so fun to watch that. And that's actually one of the things with Rodon and Gio when they're playing MLB The Show. I'm terrible at that game, and I haven't even played it in a while. But it's so fun to watch other people absolutely rake and pitch well in that game. And you can see like what they're doing and all that. So it's fun to see. Really entertaining for me.
Yeah, it's never made any sense to me because I don't play. So the idea, the sensation of watching people play, you know, to someone who you know, to a layman or whatever, is like, what in the world? How could that be appealing at all?
Right. It is definitely like one of those I guess new generation things. And the funny thing is, I'm part of, or at least I would assume I'm part of the old generation. Well, with me being born in the late 80s, but I still enjoy this stuff a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, and the way you're describing it certainly does make more sense, because it's like, oh, okay, as you just explained it, I've been in that situation before. Here's how you approach it instead, or I can't do. I run into a wall whenever that happens, and this guy got through it. And I guess from that perspective, I could see, because it might be no different than we, you know, may watch sports. You know, many of
right.
us, they no, play exactly. you know ball, so it's like, oh my gosh, you know, look what Luis Robert can do that I can't do, and you know, that's sort of cool. Not that I'm going to get out there and be able to do it,
right?
And you know, you have enough of a background to say, oh, hey. Geez, wow, he really solved that problem.
And also, you really have that same sort of mentality for rooting for the person, because in sports, you're rooting for the player that you love to do something good. And when you're watching them play a game, like for instance, watching Gio or Los play Warzone, and they're down to like 10 people and it's getting really tense, you really want them to get that win. You want them to, you're rooting for them to get that win, exactly the same as you would do in sports.
Now let's pull it back, not just on Carlos, but of course it's a very small sample size, so we're not going to overreact to anything.
Yep.
But that said, we're 6-7, tied with the Twins. The division's tight. It's not been the greatest start, but as I think I pointed out in the comments, because apparently now I've taken a role to be a little bit more of a cheerleader than I ever thought I would be on this site. But the hardest road trip. Of the season, got out of the way right off the bat, not terribly taxing beyond the injuries. The fact that Tim Anderson hasn't been active for even half the games. They've weathered quite a bit already and still pretty much coming out of it at 500, not just playing patsy teams either. About half. So, you know, with that said, not trying to influence the answer at all here, but I mean, what's your outlook? You've already explained that maybe some of the hype has been killed, and that's probably a good thing, really, you know, because few teams go, you know, first pitch to last. You know, 2005 White Sox were a very rare exception, and even they had a terrible scare there at the end of the season. So you know, you're feeling now going on to the second road trip for the White Sox, sort of where they're at. You know, there's been some highlights and some lowlights.
Well, I guess, right, as you're saying, all the hype and stuff, I bought it, especially because I'm always consuming all their media. I'm subscribed to the White Sox YouTube channel and following their Twitter. They're always putting out these hype videos, always putting out the big highlights and all that stuff going on. So I really, really was into it, especially what happened last year as well. Although they did falter at the end last year, and maybe that was some signs for this year, but then spring training came and like Moncada literally hit a home run into another field, which is ridiculous. You know, the funny thing is they gave that home run a measurement of like 490 something maybe, but then when I went on Google Maps and did the check on that exact field into the other field, it was well over 500. It's ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, so we saw the spring training, but spring training is spring training, so I guess in a way that also was me buying too much of it, and thus it lent to my emotions as well, although I did try to control them a lot better than I did last year's extremely cold start, 1-5, where I said some things that I truly regretted, as I'm sure some people may still remember and possibly still have disdain to me for. But I truly take that back and like truly regretted it even before they started going on a tear. But yeah, so take the hype down, and hopefully the team, you know, is also doing the same thing. They're not buying it and they're not believing it, and instead they're looking to see how to fix it into something that's concrete and that then people can believe and can see. And the thing is, it's all there. We could see what the mistakes are. The risp, the bullpen being shaky, the defense being shaky. Yikes. I think we got too spoiled last year from how solid everything was in the late innings. And now with things collapsing, then it's taking its toll even harder.
Yeah. Well, I think I pointed out toward the end of the podcast, the post game yesterday after the no-hitter, that when you look at the run differential, and again, very early, so you can't extrapolate, because there's some team that's based on run differential on pace for, I'm sure, like 120 wins. But the White Sox really are, at this point, the run differential is very impressive. Of course, if Tony La Russa continues to sort of space out on the bullpen and stuff, and if bad breaks continue to happen, It's right. in the runner scoring position. I mean, obviously that doesn't translate. If it did, they wouldn't play the games. But the fact that the White Sox have such are suppressing runs to the degree they are, scoring the way they are, obviously you don't like to see a losing record coming out of that. But even still, if you're to project in a Pythagorean sense, they're still paced as a 100 win plus team. Obviously, they're not going to win 100 games this year, but the fact that they're still projecting considerably better than anybody in the division. I think only the Red Sox are ahead of them in the American League. They're one of the five best teams based on run differential. And that's just, and that's taken just 6 wins out of 13. I think there's a lot sort of under the surface, sort of beyond those bad breaks and some of the questionable maybe, bullpen management decisions that are sort of suppressing, have succeeded in suppressing the hype and perhaps not the hope. And I can imagine, again, I'm the last guy to be like Mr. Cheerleader and getting the pom-poms, but I could see a breakout happening where this team looks a lot more like the post-Giolito no-hitter team, the team that really took that crazy tear, to end up being a 35-25 team last year. I could see them kicking into that gear quickly. I mean, we'll see, because obviously things can really reverse, and this offense is shown to be like, surprisingly shaky at times, even with some of the guys out. But the fact that they're 6-7 and yet they have some of these underlying statistics, I'd say is really promising. So hopefully there's a lot of reason for optimism, and hopefully they really take the stick to the Red Sox here in this series.
Yes, definitely. Wouldn't be really needed.
Bring them back down to earth and sort of assert some dominance in the American League this early. That would be very impressive. I could see that really improving mood and killing, putting in some of the dour.
Well, I mean, you can't help the dour. We're White Sox fans. We've been through 2011. We've been through 2016.
Yep.
We know how things go sometimes. But, at the same time, what you said about how they have that offense and they have those 6 wins where they scored so many and stuff, it's that whole thing where you see on possible contending teams you see them, how they describe up and coming teams, where you see that flash of greatness, like you could see that they have it in them and they just need to bring it out more. Well, this is more than having it in them. This is half the games, like you said. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely there. So even with it being there, you still have like who the hitters are, MVP, Jose Abreu, Robert, who should be tearing covers off balls, and he actually is starting to do so lately. He has Yasmani Grandal. He's actually been pretty disappointing, but he also should be doing like a lot of stuff. And I don't know, even though I am also part of Dower at times, whenever like a new game starts and I like see the lineup, or even like during the game and I see who's coming at bat, you just sort of have it in your mind that you know that these guys can do something. They should be able to do something. Mm. And it's not happening. So,
let's put it this way. It's different than a lot of years that you have been a fan where the whole lineup is like, oh my God, I'm really not going to even put one eye on this game because
right. Oh my God. That era when they just had so many games where it was like, I think the 7th inning or something, and they didn't get a hit yet, or the 6th inning and they had one hit, and I'm just like still watching or listening the whole time going like, jeez. I mean, I guess we experienced that on Monday with Bieber, but he is Bieber, so.
As I said earlier, Otto, you've earned your stripes as a fan. My goodness, you deserve some good things to be coming your way finally, because this is.
I think we all do. We all do.
And that's true, because a lot of people, I mean, we do certainly have, older fans who have certainly been able to celebrate some of the successes, and of course, pretty much all of us have some knowledge of, if not direct experience with 2005. So it's not as if it's impossible, but this, you don't usually get decades like this last one for a franchise, especially a franchise that's been traditionally competitive, traditionally proud. This was a real step back for a lot of people, whether you're a longtime fan or maybe a newer one like yourself. So I think, you've done your time, and you're still putting a lot of energy out on the site. And I love it. I love acknowledging it. And I love having you on this podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you, Brett.
And maybe we're going to do it again sometime. We're definitely going to try to pick out a few other people from the commenting core.
Oh, yeah, that would be great to hear. Podcast. Yeah, I'd be very excited to hear that, too.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. But All right, everybody, you've got a little bit more insight into commenting champ Anohito. Thank you to Ano for joining me here on this, and we'll probably do some more of these again sometime soon. But as always, thanks everybody for reading, participating, commenting, and sometimes even watching. We'll be back with more podcast stuff for you probably sooner than you think.